We were there last year, and I was there before also.
Oh.
It's interesting place, isn't it? But there are...
The big professors, but they say that there is no life after death.
Yes, they have no religion. On the whole, they have no
religion. No, and apart from religion, this is science. When you see that there is soul, and the soul transmigrates from one body to another, it has nothing to do with religion. It is a fact. It is a science. The people do not know it.
Yes, it is so true. Last year when we were in Russia, we went to many monasteries. And the monasteries are attended by a large number of people. When I was there before in 1956, there was one church, 13 people went into the church on a Sunday. But now the churches are full, not all of them, many are closed. But they have opened some of the churches again. And in the monasteries, both outside Moscow, the Goths, and outside Leningrad, there were monasteries that are of enormous size. There's in the monastery, guards around, past the state, there's a cathedral, Nevsky Prospect, and he found a Nevsky Monastery at the end of the Nevsky Prospect. And there you have a very large cathedral and 12 churches in the grounds, and four places where people, famous people and unfamous people, people who are not all that famous, musicians and philosophers and so on, they have been buried there in the time of the Tsar. And it's really very interesting to see that. And we went into the monasteries, and we find the monasteries, mostly old people, of course, and they do the chanting of their prayers, unlike the chanting that you hear in England from the old priests, who have louder voices, very melodious and everything else, but the voices are loud. But in both in outside Moscow, in Zagat, which is 40 miles outside Moscow, and in the other monasteries we visited, the voices are very soft and gentle. And they're speaking with so much feeling as they sing this song, with a voice that you can hardly hear, but you know that they're speaking these things, they're saying their prayers. And you notice that the tears are on your cheeks, bring back the memory of the past, and how times have changed, and what their fathers had taught them, and their mothers had taught them, and they've grown up and they've got old themselves, because since the revolution in 1917, in what they call the October Revolution, which was in November actually, because the dates were different in those days, 20 years up. And it's 56 years. And we were very deeply moved, you know, when we heard these people out there, the Goths especially. There were tears coming down, I thought. We watched them saying their prayers because they had their faith.
Feelings.
They had the feeling that they had their faith. They believe in the religion, they believe in God.
Yes, they are being suppressed by the God.
Well, at the moment, this time, because when I was there before, I got the feeling that they did not like religion. The authorities would not allow people to go to churches except the very old ones, except they can go there. But now many churches have reopened. We've been to some churches inside Leningrad.
When you went there?
Last year.
Last year?
Yes.
So they have changed their policy.
Yes, the thing has changed, because the previous time I went to Russia, I was invited to go to China. And I had to speak about at the centenary of George Bernard Shaw's birth. I knew George Bernard Shaw. And I went to Peking, and I traveled in various parts of China. And then I broke the journey in Siberia and went to Moscow. And I found that in Russia, there was a difference from the feeling in China. The Chinese authorities have a very great interest in and affection for and desire to help the peasants. But you don't have that in Russia. The peasants do their work and they are detached from the authorities, but in China they're not. They're much closer to the authorities. And then I also found in Russia at that time, 1956, there were people who were living in six families in one room at that time.
Six families?
Some cases, yes. Six families and three families in one room. But now, last year when we were there, we found that they built a lot of new buildings.
In Russia?
In Russia, yes. In Moscow and in Leningrad, in all the big cities. Mm. Very, very fine buildings. And they, if there is a family of father and mother and a daughter or a son, they would have one room, and the daughter is married, they would have two rooms, and they would have a little kitchen. And they give them, I said to them, now, what do you pay for this room? What is the rent?
Mm.
They worked it out in Google. It works out at 7 and 6 cents per week. And I said, well, what about the rate? They said, what a rate? I said, don't pay rate. They said, no. What about heating? They don't pay for heating. It's there. It's given you supply. But we were noticing that they...
And there's the telephone.
And telephone. They have telephone supply free.
Huh.
And any telephone call inside the town is not charged for. Hmm. Outside the town, you've got to pay.
Very good facilities.
Hmm.
But in Russia today, the people are beginning now to want a religion. After the revolution, the only religion was to establish the new regime and not to think about anything spiritual.
Yeah.
But now that the regime is a created thing, and they have their plans for their economic and domestic development, the younger people are again turning to things that are more spiritual.
Mm.
They are very interested, of course, in the arts. And perhaps they have their outlet for something beyond what the regime gives them by participating in these arts and enjoying them. But there is a general returning, or a gradual returning, to more spiritual things.
Mm. That must. This is natural, because we are spiritual identity. We are spiritual beings. So, without spiritual food, we cannot live. That is not possible.
True. But you see, there are other things there. It's interesting to go as I did to Russia last year. We noticed changes have been taking place. We went to an opera, a ballet. And at the ballet, it was a modern ballet, and there were some girls, two Russian girls, sitting alongside a South American woman. She was there by chance. And she heard us talking English, and so she addressed my wife and said, these two girls here, we talk English, and would like to talk to you. They were Russian girls, age 14, two girls in the school, together. And they spoke English extremely well. But hardly any accent, would you agree?
Yes, very well.
Very, very well indeed. So, my wife said, when did you learn English? They said, we are taught English in all our schools now.
They have to learn English.
They have to learn English.
Okay.
You see, that's why Brezhnev goes to America, because he now relies on the West. Especially one of the big countries of the West, I remember.
They can no longer support themselves. They cannot support themselves with agriculture and the commodities that the Western world and even Russia now comes to expect. They just they cannot supply these things. And so now they find that they must depend on the Western world and to work with the Western world, otherwise they are not going to have the standard of living which they take. So now there must be some kind of integration.
You see, they have a very big future, it takes time. They have a big future because the land is an expanse of 7,000 miles. If you take the measure from here to New York, it's 3,000 miles across water. Across America, it's 3,000 miles to Los Angeles. that means 6,000 miles from here. And you've got to 6,000 miles, there's still
another Atlantic. Only 3,000 miles? Atlantic?
3,000 miles. From here to America, to New York. From here to New York. From London to New York is 3,000 miles. And from New York to
Canada,
3,000 miles. But 6,000 miles. But you measure those 6,000 miles, 3,000, which is, doesn't belong to anybody, it's Atlantic.
Yeah.
You still have 1,000 miles of Russian land. 7,000 miles of land, Russia has got.
Yeah.
But they haven't developed a lot yet.
Because the climate doesn't allow. For many, many months, the whole of the country is under ice. And the change is very dramatic and very quick because they can go from winter, the depth of winter, to within a matter of days into the very heat of summer. And therefore their crops have this opportunity to germinate. And when they eventually get some growth, the heat becomes so intense that the sun burns them. And so they must go to other...
Then what is the use of that plant? If you cannot grow anything.
Well, they do to some extent. But they have droughts. That's why they block a lot of corn.
That means chance. It is chance.
It is chance, yes. It cannot be a plant, agricultural policy.
Then what is the use of such plant?
But they will develop, because they're trying all sorts of things. You see, in Tashkent and Samarkand and places like that, there are earthquakes. And the houses fall down and people get killed. But now I see that they have arranged a geometric dimension and the measurement thing with it.
Seismograph.
Yes. They are building these things under the houses so that the signal will come a few hours before the earthquake comes. And then they are ready for people to leave these houses.
After all, they have to struggle against nature's onslaught.
All the time. All the time.
Daivi jisa gunamai mama maya durutpaya. So that is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. The nature onslaught is very, very strong. And we have to struggle against those onslaughts.
Right.
This is the position of material life. Daivi jisa gunamai mama maya durutpaya. Very, very difficult. Mami was a prapadante, mayami tan taranti. It can be counteracted only by developing God consciousness. Otherwise it is not possible. The chance can be changed if God desires.
Right.
Yeah. If God desires, the desert can become a fertile land. A fertile land can become desert. That is happening by nature's own way. So, people have no knowledge now about God consciousness. They have forgotten. They have got little sentiment. But there is science. It is a science. Tad vijnanam samanvitam. Find out that verse. Jnanam te savijnanam parvakshami anasuyave. Find out this verse. Jnanam te savijnanam parvakshami anasuyave.
I've got a copy of your book,
sir. Oh, the Bhagavad Gita as it is?
Yes.
You can come here. Sit down. Yes, find out this verse. Jnanam te savijnanam parvakshami anasuyave.
Jnanam teham savijnanam idam vakshami sheshataha yad jyatvaneha bhuyon yad jyatavyama vashishyate. I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and nominal, by knowing which there shall remain nothing further to be known.
What is the purpose?
Complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world and the spirit behind it. The source of both of them is transcendental knowledge. The Lord wants to explain the above-mentioned system of knowledge because Arjuna is Krishna's confidential devotee and friend. In the beginning of the fourth chapter, this explanation was given by the Lord, and it is again confirmed here. Complete knowledge can be achieved only by a devotee of the Lord, directly from the Lord in the cyclic succession. Therefore, one should be intelligent enough to know the source of all knowledge, who is the cause of all causes, and the only object for meditation in all types of yoga practices. When the cause of all causes becomes known, then everything knowable becomes known, and nothing remains unknown. The Vedas say, Yasmin vigyate sarvam eva vigyatam bhavanti.
Yasmin vigyate sarvam eva vigyatam bhavanti. Simply by knowing the Supreme, everything is known. Everything has become known. That's when we get it. Some of we get some of them. What is the next class?
Manushyanam savasreshu kashchit yatati siddhaye yatatamati siddhalam kashchin mamve tikatkataha. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth.
You've done a wonderful work of translation of these things in the 2 extent that you've done it, a thousand pages of it. Yes. And I've been reading this in the last few days. But I've not had time to read as many as I want, but I shall read the whole thing. And you've got the translation there, word for word translation. You can't read that enough, but you can chant the verse also. By Roman translators. So our proposition is the sufferings of the people, all kinds of suffering. There are three kinds of suffering, material, misery, adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidoidik. Adhyatmik means concerning the body and the mind, there are sufferings. Everyone has experience. Concerning the body and mind, there are sufferings. And there are sufferings imposed by other living entities. This is called adhibhauti. And suffering imposed by the natural phenomena. Just like you say, earthquake, recovering by snow. So people have no hand checking these things. There are three kinds of miserable condition. And we are spirit soul. We are struggling how to be happy without this suffering. This is struggle for existence. What do you think? Is that all right?
Sounds very good to me. I think yes. It's so.
So, these sufferings, you can adjust some sufferings by material adjustment, but it is not possible to get out of the sufferings completely in material existence. That is not possible. That is, Bhagavad Gita says, at least this janma-mrityu jarabhyasi dukkha dosha-anugrahas. You can adjust by so-called education, so-called scientific method, adjust these three kinds of miserable conditions, but ultimately you have to submit to the four principles of suffering, namely birth, death, old age, and disease. That you have to submit. So the modern scientists, modern philosophers, what is called altruists, philanthropists, politicians, writers, thinkers, they are all trying to mitigate the suffering. But they have set aside the four principal sufferings, birth, death, old age and disease. Nobody has proposed that we can give you relief from birth, death, old age and disease. Is there any such thing? That we can get out of all these sufferings by spiritual meditation. That is possible. So our this Krishna consciousness movement is to give relief to the people from these sufferings. Now how it is done, how it is possible to do, that is a detail. But our Krishna consciousness movement is meant for this purpose, to give relief from all suffering. And that is possible to get utilizing this human form of life. In other form of life, cats and dogs, animals, there is no possibility. So, the human form of life is especially meant for getting out of all these sufferings, provided he takes education, acts accordingly. Then, after giving up this body, he does not accept anymore material body which is subjected to all these sufferings. He remains in the spiritual body and enters into the spiritual world and live eternally, blissfully. This is our proposal. What do you think?
It's very comforting the way you put it.
Yes.
I think it is.
This is possible. Every enlightened gentleman, thoughtful man, they should study this philosophy and science and scrutinize it, understand it. That's why you are an author. You can contribute to these people such knowledge, and it will be tremendous benefit for them. Otherwise, if we produce some fiction, it may give for some moment some so-called pleasure, but actually a literature should be presented in which people can get relief from the sufferings of this material existence. That is stated in the Srimad Bhagavata. Tadvāga viśarta janatāga viplava jasmin tati śrukumavadravat tati nāman inantasya jasum kitāni jat ginnanti sinnanti gāyanti sāra. Transcendental literature, giving spiritual light, even if it is not very correctly written from literary point of view, still such literature is adored by sadhu, saintly person, God-conscious person. They hear such literature, sinnanti, gayanti, vichayanti, and they accept. It has nothing to do with the literary duty. It may be written in broken language, it doesn't matter. And just contrary to this, there is another cause. What is that? Nakat vata sitta padam harir jasa prajinita karhichi tad vayasam tirtham usanti manasa tad vayasam tirtham usanti manasa. You can find out this. Yes. Natad vata citra padam harer jasa. Can you get here? It is in the first canto, third chapter.
But there are so many millions of people who have no homes, no food, and they're visited by sickness and hunger, and they have no hope. They feel they have no hope to live out their lives in any kind of human comfort. And how are these people to spiritually think themselves out of their physical misery?
So let them come to us. We shall give them food, shelter, everything.
But people in poor Indian people in South America.
Now call them, all those, you are referring some class of men. Let all of them come to us. We shall have provide.
With that spiritual
yes,
security.
Both material and spiritual. We shall supply them material food, clothing, shelter, everything, and give them spiritual and life. Call them.
So you must spread yourself across the
yes,
world.
Yes, we are spreading.
They're doing it.
They're doing it. We are calling, come everyone. We have no such problem. We speak with this house, George Harrison and Gimlet, such a big house. We are living comfortably, we are also eating, we are also sleeping. We have no concern, we have no problem. Respectfully, can see, can stay with us and see that we have no such problem.
But it is for a minority, not for a majority.
But let the majority come to us. Why do they not come? When we invite them, come here, no, they will not come.
But you haven't loaves and fishes, you cannot at this time.
But we cannot supply fishes.
Yes.
That is not possible.
So you can teach them and you can help them to have spiritual comfort when their stomachs are empty.
Their stomach, I shall give food. Is not this?
Yes.
We are giving food.
Yes.
Do things that can rice, dal, and then loaf, then sweet meats, sweet rice, fruits, so many things we are supplying. They are not food. We have to go by their dictation that you must supply them meat, fish, eggs, and wine. And no, that we cannot do.
But the basic necessities and the goodness of
yes.
food you can offer them.
We can supply nice food, healthy food. See, they are eating, these boys. They are giving us. They don't smoke, they don't take tea, they don't take coffee even. Simple food on vegetables, grains, milk, fruits. They are keeping there. It's very nice.
And do they divorce themselves from all physical labor? Do they take themselves away from all physical labor? Because if they had the opportunity to make and to cultivate for themselves,
we do that. We do that. Yes, we cultivate our own food.
Yes.
Yes. We have us. Yes. We have got a place. We have got a place in New Virginia. Yes. We are producing our food. Actually, we have created this uncomfortable situation. Human being, anywhere, any part of the world, if they are not land and the animals, cows, all economic questions can be solved. Now, here there is so much land vacant. They are not utilized for producing food. They are keeping cows for flux. This is their business. They are utilizing land for keeping some cows for being cluttered. So, if you go on committing sinful life, how you can be happy? Now, in the Christian Bible, it is clearly said, thou shalt not kill. Why they are killing? Why they are killing? Who is Christian? It is very difficult to find out a Christian. So people have become godless, faithless, they must suffer. This is nature's way. Devi-dhi-sa-gunamahi mamumara-virutta. If you want to help him, he cannot be happy. Suppose a diseased man, he is suffering from dysentery. So if you think, oh, let me supply him food, so he cannot digest food. So one who is condemned to suffer, you cannot give him any relief. You cannot give him any relief. This is futile attempt. And nature's way is, as soon as people will become demonic, godless, they should be put in different kinds of misery. Already there is miserable condition. And when they become more and more sinful, they are put into more and more miserable condition. How you can help them? Now here, we are asking everybody, but come here, take your shelter, take your food, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But who is coming? Many men come here after 1 day, 2 days, where? Because they cannot get tea, they cannot get cigarette, they cannot get meat, right?
Some people are born physically, but they are not born spiritually ever.
But they let them learn how to live spiritually. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness moment is there. Why are you opening so many centers? They are inviting. Come on, live with us, learn. What is spiritual life? So how we can help them? We can give shelter immediately in this house, at least 200 men. Let them come, live with us. But they will not come. As soon as they will hear, there is no tea, there is no coffee, there is no cigarette, there is no meat, there is no illicit sex, any deliverance. Otherwise, we can invite, come on. We are depending, we are not anxious. We are depending on Krishna. We are living here, at least 50 men. We do not know what we eat next day. We do not know. We have no such provision. But we are not dying out of starvation. We are eating. We are having our kirtan, our worship, study of this literature, everything. So we have to believe Tesham Satanta Yuktanam, what is that? Tesham Nityari Yuktanam Yuga Tsima Vahami Om. Find out. Tesham Nityari Yuktanam. You are coming from Calcutta? Bengali?
No.
Oh, you are Mota's son?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Where you have come? When you have come here? Where you are staying? In a hotel. You can come here, your father told me. Your father came to me, so I told him that you have a sufficient place. Both your son and daughter in law may come and live with us. So I am very glad to see. Read that.
Ananya Chintayanto Mam Yedanakvadipasate Tesa Nityati Yuktanam Yoga Kshemam Bahamyaham. But those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have.
He takes response. He takes responsibility. He says, and this is practical, we are simply concerned with Krishna consciousness. So, we have no anxiety. What to get, who, how to live, Krishna gives us. That's why he has given us this place. We never attempted, neither we have money to purchase such a big property. But Krishna has given us. Simply everywhere, 100, 200, 500 men living in our center, and we have no concern.
You are pouring your faith into Krishna, and Krishna is giving you
everything.
What you have to have.
Actually, he is giving everyone, even one has no faith. Just like government, anyone, a citizen who has no faith in the government, has committed criminal activities, he is also supplied food by the government. Is it not? To the prison house. So, Krishna, God is supplying food to everyone. That is already arranged. He is supplying food to the elephant, he is supplying food to the ant. The elephant requires so much food at a time. But there are thousands and millions of elephants in African jungle. Who is supplying food there? They are not dying of starvation. Have you seen any bird or beast has died out of starvation?
No.
So, there are 8,400,000 species of different forms of life. Human life, human form of life is very, very small quantity, only 400,000. So, there are 8,400,000 different forms of life. If God can supply 8,000,000 forms of life with their food, He cannot supply food to the 400,000. Why you are so much anxious about your food? This is wrong concept.
I ask, not because I'm anxious, but I ask to hear what you have to say.
Yes, that I have to say that we have got full faith in God and He supplies everything. He supplies to the non-devotees. Why not to the devotees? So I dedicated the life for God. So, that is the Vedic information. Mrityam Kyanam Ketanam Ketananam Eko Jo Bahunam Vidudati Kaman. This is description. This is Sanskrit. This is Sanskrit, yes. Kailas man. That God means He is also a person like you and me. So He is one person and we are many living into this. Nitya Nityana. He is the chief. He is the chief person. Supreme person. We are all persons. And He is the chief person. Now what is the difference between the supreme person and these many persons? The difference is the ego bhunam jo vidudhati kama. That one is supplying all the necessities of this world. So they are being maintained. And He is maintainer. That is the difference.
He is the divine creator of everything.
Yes. That's like father. Father, my 10 children. So He is giving food to all the children. So He is the supreme father. We are all children. Why He shall not be? Even good son or bad son, a father is equal. But if we become good, that means if we become obedient to the Father, that is success of life. So our endeavor should be how to become faithful to God. We haven't got to ask Him for our food. He is supplying and He will supply. Our business is how to become faithful to God. That is our business. Because we being not being faithful, we are put into this material. And as soon as we become faithful, we get relief from this material existence. Takta deham punat janma mamitu kampiya. Kind of this janma parma bhagibhav dhyana si tattva. Everything is explained there.
If you value something that is gold and you want it and you don't have it, then you are unhappy. But if the gold is of no value to you, you don't want it and you are happy with us.
No, God is good. We do not know what is good. God is good. We
gold. Gold.
Gold.
Yes. Someone says, I will not have been happy unless I have this thing. And this thing is not attainable, so they are not happy without it. But if they can teach themselves that the material thing is
better,
then they are happy with us.
Yes, that we are teaching, that you do not know what is that goal that will make you happy.
Yes.
That we are presenting. That was that. Jasmin vijyate sadhavaidam vijyatam bhavanti. He to make your goal, God, and then you'll be happy. That is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Nati vibhu sattva gatem hi Vishnu. They do not know what is the goal of life. The goal of life is to attain favor of Vishnu. Durasayaji vahirathamanina. They are trying to be happy by material adjustment. And people are being misled. And misleaders, so-called politicians, philosophers, and they're misleading that you do this, you'll be happy. You do this, they do not know. Even the so-called teachers and philosophers, they do not know what is the goal of life. And they're giving misdirection to these people. Andhajatam, Vairupuniyam, and it's like a blind man. He's trying to lead other blind men. How he can help? He does not know himself. What is the goal of life? There is a defect. Some blind man, they are trying to lead other blind men. That's what you find. Sometimes people listen. Again, they are coming to their original position. That this is going on. Andhada khan, bhirupunya mana. A blind man, come on this side. No, it is not. Come this side. That this is going on. But they do not know. What is the goal of life? And this is goal of life.
The goal of life directs the mind to the spiritual and God.
Yes.
And the goal of life emerges of various branches in life from that faith in God and from the spiritual attitude of mind and feeling. You then have to expand along the ways that God would wish, namely to think of others, to be kind to others, to help others, and so on. Isn't that true?
No, God does not say that you kind to the others. God is sufficient himself. He does not require your help.
He does?
No.
No. We have to try and...
You are created. You have created this conception that if I don't help him, then he will die. If you can help him, you can help him with God's consciousness, awakening his God. That is real help. If you think that I shall make him happy by material supply, it is not possible. It's not possible. It is a failure. It is failure, everyone. Just like your, not your American people, I was talking in 1965, one sunrise, Ramakrishna Mission. So the gentleman told me frankly that you are taking so much money from America for Daridra Narayan Seva, for feeding the poor. But when we go to India, we see all poor men lying on the street and footpath. What you have done? So this Ramakrishna Mission, who is the same, to feed the poor, to make them happy, They are working for 100 years. But what they have done? What they have done? And who has done? Everyone speaks like that, big words. That I shall help the poor, I shall make the unhappy happy. But who has done it? Nobody can do it. If nature has put him into trouble, you have no power to amend it. Just like a person who is condemned to death by the state law, you cannot help. You cannot help. It is not possible. Can you? Similarly, if one is condemned, how you can help? If he is condemned by God. Tāvat tanumritāṁ tadupekṣitāna. So this is a science one has to learn. You don't waste your time by so-called philanthropic work. You cannot help. This is not possible. If you want to help any people, just be yourself, Krishna conscious, and try to help others to become Krishna conscious. That is real. Otherwise you cannot help. It is not possible. This is the best help to the human society, to awaken their Krishna consciousness. This is the best help. Parupaka. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mission. He asked every Indian, Bharat bhumite manusya janma hai raja. Janma sarthak kori karo parupaka. This is the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, that anyone who has taken birth in India, he should make his life successful first and then distribute the knowledge all over the world. That is his mission. Because this Krishna consciousness understands him. Still, India is so fallen, he still there is.
Doing
it
for myself. And then after that, I went back again to India. After my being educated in London, in history, I went back to India and I joined a newspaper there called The Englishman.
Englishman, yes. Yeah.
And when I got there, I found that I was appointed assistant editor of The Englishman. I won a four assistant editors.
What is your age now?
Mm-hmm.
What is your age now?
What is my age now?
Yes.
I'm 77.
Oh.
You are a junior.
No, I have asked
that. You are a few months older than me.
My birth date is 1896. 1896? Yes.
Well, I think you're 1895, so I'm older than you. And I then went to Calcutta and I joined this newspaper. And I was made assistant editor. And I disagreed with the policy of that paper. Because that paper was, as in The Englishman, it was for showing how the English should rule the Indians.
Yes.
And I was against that. I said, this is the country of the Indians. It is not for us.
Therefore, there.
It is for us to restore the country to them.
Yes, that is very nice.
And the editor did not agree with me. And I refused to write any articles.
Therefore, British Empire failed.
Hmm?
British Empire failed,
yes,
on this short-sighted policy. They wanted to rule all over the world.
That's right. That's
for
right.
The British people, mm-hmm, not for the people.
I said to the editor, I'm sorry, I can't write articles that are attacking Indians. It's their country and I am on their side. So I then found that I wanted to go and do some reporting and he would not allow it. Mm. He said the Indians would do their own reporting. But there was born in India, what are you talking about? And anyhow, I then set out on my own, and the paper, The Englishman, was attacking a paper called the Amrita Bazaar Patrika.
Yes.
Motilal
Ghosh. His review came yesterday.
Really?
2 days ago.
And so I wandered around. He was living his office was somewhere in the hospital. Yes,
and their office was in Bagwaj.
Hmm?
Bagwaj.
What do you call
it?
Bhagavad.
Yes.
And I went there, and I went out.
I think he lived in Sambhaja, not Helsinki.
What?
There was a stable of the tramways company.
Well, But I went there when he was sitting there on the floor.
No, yeah, he was there. When he was born, yes. He said, underneath there are pots. So in some other depot, in our childhood we saw, the tram car was drawn by horses. So they had different stables. Mm-hmm. In some matter, there was a stable, I remember.
Yes, I see. So I went down into this place, it is from Harrison Road. Is it John Harrison Road? It's such a long time ago.
Yes, Harrison Road is very long, and from Howrah Bridge.
Yes, Harrison Road. Yes. Harrison
Road. Yes.
Yes, I know that. And I went to the place, and I went upstairs, and Motilal Ghosh was sitting on the floor. Mm-hmm. As one would. And I sent my name in, because I wasn't allowed in, and I gave my name, and I had a card as a man who was attached to a newspaper. And he would send it to Motilal Ghosh, and Motilal Ghosh sent the card back and said he wanted to do nothing with me. So I went to the door and I greeted him like this, and I said, I have come to talk to you. And he just looked at me, and I sat on the floor with him, and we talked a great deal about all sorts of things, and he could see from the way I was interested in India and the people of India and the future of India, that the next morning he wrote a big article on the front page saying that I had been to him and we talked, and my editor was curious. But the editor didn't do anything to me.
And you were very young. Okay.
I was very young, about 20 years old. And then I developed by taking charge of various things, but I refused to write anything against India. And the editor then had made me his chief assistant. And he came to England. And I was in charge. And two or three days after he left for England, no airline.
Which paper? That Englishman?
Englishman.
Yes.
I then, when he turned his back, he went away to England, Motilal Nehru.
Motilal Nehru, yes.
My father, yes. I just come out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote to him. And I said that we have said a lot of things.
He had a paper also, Nehru.
He had, and I wanted him to write
Independence or something like that.
I wanted him to write to me.
Ah.
So I wrote and said, I have now in charge the Englishman for a few months, and we have written the English viewpoint, the paper has, but I would like for you to express the Indian viewpoint. And he wrote to me, he was living in Baliganj.
Baliganj, somewhere there.
I think it was Baliganj.
Maybe, yes.
Hmm? I don't know. And he wrote...
No, Baliganj, there is a place.
Yes. And he wrote to me, it was at Baliganj, and I wrote to me to say, will I come and see him? So I went to see him and we talked quite a bit, and he agreed to write to me 6 articles from the Indian point of view in the Englishman paper, which is an Englishman paper and anti-Indian. And the article appeared, there was no air service in those days, and when the paper arrived in England, the editor was furious, he sent a telegram, and he bought the next ship and came back to India. And he told me that I had no business to do this. I said, I was editor in your absence, and that's the way I look at things. And I realized that I would be sacked. But he didn't sack me. All he said was that I am stopping the series. I said, how are you going to stop it? I said, I gave him a contract to write 6, and he's only written 2 so far. He's got to do the other 4. And he carried it there, he carried it. And they left that. But you know, this episode of mine, I forgot completely for the years, but I met Nehru's sister, who was the...
Vijayalakshmi.
Mrs. Watson, is
that? Vijayalakshmi.
Vijayalakshmi. Yes, that's right. And I brought her to the world. And she was she had a high position here on behalf of Nehru. What was he?
She was sealed ambassador.
And when I was at a lunch party, and I was introduced to her with other people there, she came and sat next to me at the lunch table. And she said, I wanted to meet you. She said, I read some of the things you've written. And she says, and I'm editing my father's book of letters. And she says, and there are references to you in the book. I couldn't understand it. I said, why should your father write about me? So she says, because you would love the book. And then it came back to me.
Hmm.
and all these years later. But that's it. And so I always campaign for the freedom of India. I have the same attitude towards countries that belong to other people. It belongs to them and it should be there.
You are very liberal minded.
But that's what we said.
Yes.
It's real.
Yes.
Natural.
Yes.
Why should you take a country away from other people?
That is Vedic Indians. Mahavidas Pashati Dhanam. Tena Tastena Bhangita. You should be satisfied. What is given to you by God, you should not encroach upon others' problems. That is very clear of life. It is very perfect life. Why should I encroach upon others' things? I should be satisfied with my own things. What God has given to me, this is very clear. Actually, everything belongs to God. So that's like everything belongs to Father. And Father did something to his son. He should be satisfied what is given by the Father. He should not encroach upon other brother's property. This is the way of life.
Mary, you say that this house was given to you by George Harrison. And this is quite interesting because the Beatles were born in very humble circumstances. Yes. And they had a talent. And they used their talent. But God would make their talent earn for them, and they, with that talent and with what they earn, can give back into the pool so that it can go on.
This is the way of life. That is the way of life that is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. How one's life can be perfect. That is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Atapungi vijasreshta varnathama vibhava sanasthitasya dharmasya sansiddhi haritosam. According to Vedic way of life, there are four divisions of the society. The the brahmana, the kshatriya, the vaishya, you know, the shudra, and the brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. This is the regulated life of human society. Varnatha. If we want to satisfy the supreme, if we want to reach the ultimate goal of life, we must go through this process, varnatha. Therefore, according to Vedic principle, unless one accepts this Vedic varnatha dharma, he is not considered as human being, because this is the way to reach to the ultimate goal. So, this is one side. So, the discussion was going on in Vaisharana, and Śrūta Gosvāmī was the president. So, he explained that human life, it doesn't matter in which section he belongs, because any man, he must be within any one of these divisions. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. It doesn't matter in which category he belongs to. But his aim should be how to satisfy the Supreme. Then is he satisfied. Either he is a Brahman, or a Shudra, or a Brahmachari, or Sannyasi, it doesn't matter. But if his aim is how to satisfy the Supreme. Similarly, as you have explained, these boys, the Beatles, especially this George, he is trying to satisfy Krishna. He has got a talent. By his talent, he has got enormous money. Now he's thinking that these people are trying to spread Krishna consciousness. They are servants of Krishna. See, if I can help them, Krishna is pleased. That is success.
And of these Beatles, he is perhaps the most spiritually satisfied.
Yeah, no, it's very good. He came yesterday. He's been for 3 hours. He's very interested. He wants to hear. First of all, he gave me $19,000 for publishing my Krishna book. Then go. When the first came to see me, so I asked him that he was a nice boy, and that one part cost me $19,000. So we are inviting everyone to come and take some nice prasad and leave here.
Mr. Ray wants to speak Hindi also.
He knows Hindi?
Yes, he speaks Hindi also.
Oh, you can speak in Hindi also?
Hindustan.
Yes, he is born in India. Now, formerly, all Europeans, they had to learn the local language. Those were officers. I was student in Scottish Church's College. So they were mostly Scotsmen, all professors. But they used to learn Bengali. I had one my professor, Professor Scringer. He was English professor. So when he was teaching us English, he is quoting parallel passages from Bankim Babu's book. You know Bankim Babu, Bankim Chandra Chatterjee, famous novelist. Bankim Chandra Chatterjee.
Oh, yes.
He was considered a Scot of Bengal. Sir Walter Scott.
I know the Tani because I was born in Calcutta and we had people who talk in Tani and I knew the Tani better than my father. And I came, when I went back to India after being in England for my studies, I found that the Hindustani was very easy to come to, come by here. But about 3 years ago, somebody was going to do some film work in Pakistan. And he asked me if I would go and help him in there. So I said, I'm not able to come. I said, I won't have time to take part in all this work with you. And he said, you know the place, you know the language, you know this. And I said, well, I don't know everything. I do know bits of Pakistan and I will not be able to come. So what he did was, he bought a ticket to fly me out to India with him. And I said, well, you can't buy a ticket for me and take me. I said, I just can't come. I said, if you wait, I'll come with you for a fortnight just before Christmas, and I must be back for Christmas. So he booked the ticket, and I went down. And his purpose was to do a film on Pakistan from the outset of his freedom, up to that time when I was there, which was in 1968, December. And I said I would just help him with some research, and that's all. But when we arrived, he got flu, and he wasn't there for 5 days. And he knew I was going to stay there for a fortnight. So the next day, instead of his being able to do it, I had to go out with the camera and everything else, and I took the pictures for 5 days. And when he was better, he said, well, now we go on Sunday. I said, well, I'll go up to the north, and I'll go and see all the parts this side, but I can't go to East Pakistan because I have no time. I'll not get back to work I'm doing. And so I spent a fortnight there. But what I was leading up to say was this, that it was years after I met him there. And I was in a car, and a man in front was told to drive by somewhere. And this man could speak an English dog in his tongue. And he was given instructions in his tongue, and I found and put every word. And this man said he wasn't going to do something or other, and I then suddenly came up with words that I had forgotten. I remember, I said, Bandabhatia Pandavas is a contact. And he looked at me, he was so surprised, he said, gee. But then you see, I have always taken the view when I was in India, even at the time, and since then, I always called the man not Tum, but Ah. Because he is equal to us. He's no different from us.
Yeah. That is he. Gentleman said that. Ah. Tum is not good.
Tum is inferior.
Inferior.
But you see, I have a great affection for him.
Because you are born. Janani Janva Humishta Sarvanati Gariyasu. Yes. Anyone who is born in a land, he is automatically becomes very favorite. Mother and the birthplace, they are very favorite to everyone. Janani Janva Humishta Sarvanati Gariyasu. It is better than heaven.
Have you been in India?
Yes.
You have, you know? You got married there,
wouldn't you? Somebody from a group of her.
So, kindly take prasadam. Krishna prasadam. Yes.
I'm sorry.
You also take? I believe you. Is it correct?
Correct.
Puri halwa.
Hmm?
Puri halwa.
Halwa.
Hmm.
This is halwa.
Puri halwa and fruits.
Do you find it noisy, busy?
Very busy.
And how many days have you been here? So everything is very new to you. Where are you staying in London?
Mount Road.
Yes.
In Oxford Street.
Yep, you know what? Temple in London?
In Paris, we have seen London, we have not seen any place.
London city also, we have 7 buried places. So, how did you get this address?
From India, I don't
know. Oh, your father?
Yes. I don't know.
Amsterdam also, we have one. You have seen? In Genoa also you have got?
Yes, I've been. We have built it.
Hmm.
roses are they made of the roses?
What they saw, what was it, the young man before them saw, what did he just say? Nothing.
Ramatan.
What led him to my husband? How did he know she gave the cause of my husband?
She wasn't around, Jai Hari found out how to find out about them to approach him. We don't know. Basically, we would say Krishna arranged.
What happened?
Some very coincidence. Mm-hmm.
Martin Margaret is coming here, I think. You can meet him.
Martin Margaret. Oh, I am hard.
My husband knows him, and he lives not very far away from us, in the country.
You better do it.
Because? Are you going to stay long here, or are you just on a visit?
I
didn't have a visit. You go back to Amsterdam, go ahead.
And then the thing
to
go down to the
Can
you be
heard? Yes. Austria, then there. Your first visit to these countries?
Yes.
What do you think of the different ways that people live? They're very different, aren't they?
Very different from India.
They're very different from each other. Don't you think?
Yes.
You go to America, don't you? You won't go there.
Do you think that the politicians of the world don't have a sufficiently spiritual approach to life?
Mm-hmm.
You think that the politicians don't have a spiritual...
I'm not very good opinion of the politicians. It may be a very strong one. Politicians, actually, this is the business of the Kshatriyas.
They are here for personal gain, mm-hmm. Mostly.
They simply go to politics for personal gain. Yes.
Because if they all wanted good, if they all wanted the same kind of good for the same for all their people, they would not fight in different camps. They would be one people.
Right. They want personal benefit. Not the benefit of the people. They say, people's government. No, it is their government.
Yes. And they must, and the people must pay and accept what they decree they shall have.
That's right.
And if they want the rich people to have more money, they say to the rich people, you don't have to pay so much taxes. But to the poor people, they say, you must pay more taxes.
In the Bhagavata, it is mentioned, the people will be so much embarrassed. One side, there will be no rain. Another side, there will be scarcity of foodstuff. Another side, the government will simply levy taxes. So people will become mad. They will give up their huts and home and go to the jungle.
Yes.
This time will come very soon.
Well, I think sometimes in the hippie community we see that they're going out and all in the jungle now. Rock and roll festivals is practically like living in the jungle.
But you know, in Russia, the people, the younger people, are now going back to having more spiritual thoughts and a desire to have a more spiritual life. But at the same time, it is not separate from the fact that when they see people from the Western world and from beyond the Iron Curtain coming into Russia with various worldly goods, expensive cameras, expensive clothing, they want this. So eventually, and in the not too distant future, Russia will also become capitalist state. The only thing that prevents them from being capitalist is that the commodities are not sufficient.
The basic thing is that the communist party is becoming a capitalist class.
It is. And it has been for some considerable time. Even in Stalin's time, he lived as a capitalist.
The only difference is that the complaining is not permitted. It's whenever in the chat there's a complaint, it's immediately
crisis. Oh, but
there
was a course. This is why they were worried, very worried about Brezhnev going to America while the Watergate scandal was going on. But why they should have been that embarrassed about it with Brezhnev, one would guess. Because Brezhnev would say, why did you give them money in our country and we would shoot them? You see, they would say we wouldn't have bribed them not to to vote for us. If they didn't vote for us, we would send them to a labor camp. So what, they wouldn't be embarrassed.
You see, when America was people by people from this country who went to settle there and was under English rule. And they, a group of people there who were belonged to Puritan class. They were not Roman Catholics and they weren't Church of England, but they were Puritans. And they were interfered with by Charles I. And they got together 11 ships and went across to Massachusetts, which didn't belong to England at all. And they set up their own community there, in Massachusetts.
And New England. New England.
New England. And while they were setting up their homes there, many other people came from England. They never shifted to all get there. I think about six cars there, the others were lost. And they set up their homes there, and they had a very strong control of the people. They did not allow the people to get away from any laws that the government had not made. A man appointed himself governor of the country, a man called Winthrop, who was an Englishman who went from Cambridge. And the others just had to obey the laws. And for more than 100 years, if people had disobeyed the laws, they were put in prison or they were executed. And they can say, the Americans who have been to Russia, one of them is Parker Miller. He's been to Russia 2 or 3 times. And I was waiting to see if he noticed any of the mistakes that Russia is making and the harshness that Russia is visiting on the people. And then I saw these harshnesses, and then he brought in this point that I have just mentioned. He said, in Massachusetts, the people had to obey the laws or they were punished. And he said, then
the government in the old days, before independence, was strictly enforced.
And so they enforced it for over 100 years. He says in Russia, he says they're there for 56 years. He says they're enforcing it because 100 years haven't been reached yet. That's one way of covering it up. But nevertheless, you see, this age you can go a little more rapidly and accept something. You see, one although I can see many faults in life, I can see what really has happened. When they broke away, they had little chance of survival because we had English troops, which I think was wrong, in Archangel, in the Dardanelles, and in Siberia, to stop them. And they just had to keep trying getting together somehow to get some weapons to try and have them survive. The Russians had to do it. And their one aim in life was to try and survive. And that is the trouble, and that is the material thing that has dominated their attitude to life.
Well, it was not quite so material. And they didn't want to achieve wealth. They wanted to achieve a standard of living. They wanted it to be possible that they shouldn't freeze in winter and die of starvation in summer, and that they had homes. And what we today, when we go to Russia and we think, oh, they haven't this and they haven't that, and if they saw what they have in the Western world, their eyes would open very wide. But on the other hand, when you think that it is only 57 years since they had anything at all, then you have a different approach to what their sense of achievement is. And also they have their sense of values is not the sense of values that we who have been spoiled and ruined in the Western world of possession. They have felt if they have a roof over their head, if they have a certain amount of health services and enough food, then they have achieved quite a lot.
Well, it's the same service. I just read in this a little while back, the government itself in Russia admits that every year 13 million people are arrested for being drunken and disorderly.
Oh, but this is true. At 9 o'clock in the morning, you can see men walking through the street and terribly drunk. And they have kiosks in the street where they sell beer.
And that means suffering. That means they are also suffering.
Because they are dropping their suffering.
That's right.
And what they need is some drink on the street.
They have little kiosks.
What is it? Drink?
And they buy a big jar of beer. And one will be a long avenue. So they start drinking their beer at this end. And at the other end of the avenue, there is another kiosk with drinks.
Yes.
And even the sailors are sitting there in their uniforms, falling off the seat with drink.
Yes.
I was very surprised because I didn't see the thing that time I was in Russia. There was one morning, on Sunday morning, we were near the church, but that church was shut. And then I saw, and my wife did too, three men who were working men on Sunday morning, because Sunday is not mean anything to the Russians. And they were very drunk. They were thinking and they were looking about, waving their hands around and everything else. Nobody could hear them. Nobody
likes them. But they have sometimes you will see, for the most part, you will see people almost uniformly dressed. Badly cut suits, badly dressed. But occasionally you will see people very, very smart, in very good clothes and very expensive clothes. And you know that these are not a home product. And then you discover later that there are certain secret shops where the hierarchy go and shop by themselves and they can buy the things. But when I talk to somebody and I said, you're wearing a very expensive dress, a very smart dress, but it wasn't made in Russia. And he said, oh, I said, and you don't see them in the Russian shop. And he said, oh yes, but you see, we only have a few in the country. And when they go to the shop, everyone rushes home. But this isn't there. Everything is there. Everything. Most expensive things you can buy in Russia, if you are of that class, of the higher.
Now what we found in Russia is this, that they want to get solid money. They are trying to get
money. Yes, they want to get dollars.
And English money. They have four types of money they want. They want German money, they want French money, they want English money, and they want American money.
Foreign money.
Foreign money. And they have these places where they sell you goods cheap, You must then pay them in your own coin. You can't pay them in Russian money.
Hmm.
And then that's what we found.
Yes.
We bought a number of things, a few things.
Coins,
things like that. But they also have a lot of supermarkets, big markets, all over the country. And they are
controlled by government.
Hmm?
Controlled by government?
No, they're controlled by government, but whatever control the government has there, the markets are supplied by an Italian and an American firm in joint stock. Something Detroit, accounting.
They do have very high appreciation of art. Of the art. Very high appreciation.
Hmm.
The galleries, the ballets, the theatre, it's all very, very good. Those are the good things there.
Hmm. But when you see them tilling their soil and their ground, filled with very primitive implements,
yes.
And you realize that they haven't got the things that the Western world have, and this is why Brezhnev must go to America and bury his pride and ask for grain. And ask for machinery, because their machinery, they have outer space, capsules, but they haven't machinery to till the ground.
The point that I've seen is that previously there was a hard struggle for physical survival.
Yes.
And that they managed to satisfy that to some extent, and they lost more and more material prosperity. And you see that the people are becoming again depressed, and they're drinking, and so many things.
But they always drink. The
Russians
always
drink. Yes, but just like you were saying, they notice more than before.
Yes.
More than before. That means that they're not solving their problem of not being satisfied, becoming unhappy. They trade one kind of difficulty for another kind of difficulty, and they don't find a solution. To the fact that they're not happy with life. And they're missing the entire point. Because they're, as you said, like a big sign of the saying, there is no life after death. Second sign of the saying, there's no life after death. There's no spirit in the body. It's a gross materialist. No matter how they arrange it, they'll never become happy. Because they're always missing the point. And they really are spirit.
I think that bit by bit they will come to the spiritual side, they're bound to it. Because the spirit has to survive.
They'll come if they're presented with it very nicely. If you don't present spiritual knowledge, actually, nobody will suspect it. As soon as they accept the body as the self and try to work hard to become the God, but if they're presented with it nicely, just like you get presented with a nice philosophy and a nice way of experiencing the philosophy. And then this way, as they're exposed to it, then they'll be inclined to take it.
But don't you feel that there is a certain spiritual striving through their music and through their art forms? I think they express themselves spiritually in that way quite a lot.
Well, the question becomes the definition of what is spiritual. And from our point of view, the service of God, that is actually spiritual life. The glorification of God, the service of God. And the glorification and service are other goals or ends. These are on different platforms of material consciousness. Until they link you with God, the Supreme Lord, which when we say with Krishna, right? Then you get spiritual experience. But amongst the activities of material experience, which are not done in the service of God, there is of course a tremendous variety. A variety from getting drunk on theater to performing opera to glorify the Russian Revolution. And they could make a very nice opera for glorifying the Russian Revolution. And it's a subtle form of material enjoyment. Again, it will not fulfill it, but it's more subtle. They may, it has more attraction to an intelligent person than drinking liquor. But not spiritual bliss. And let's be honest.
I think you're right there, but there is, no spiritual feeling at the moment, because you see, they do worship in a sort of way, a political way. Let's see. There are banners 6 or 7 stories high of Lenin.
Right.
You see, those
might just begin to worship Mao in the same way. Sure.
That's
a huge statue as well.
That's right.
And they're worshiping an ordinary man, and in America, they need spiritual satisfaction. And it gets different kinds of mental stimulation, but it will always leave them wanting it, right? Because the real complete person, they're not used to it.
This question I asked Mr. Potapsky, that where is the difference between your philosophy and my philosophy? You have Lenin for your worship, and we have Krishna for our world. So where is the difference in the principle?
No.
I am asking that.
This is a discussion with Mr. Kutasi.
Yes.
So, he could not reply.
Well, you see, the Russians have some sort of feeling that Lenin is a sort of savior, a material savior.
Well, everyone thinks. Everyone thinks of it, just like we Indians.
Yes.
We think of Gandhi, that he is the savior.
Yes.
But the same Gandhi is disrespected in Pakistan. The Pakistani, they think Jinnah is the savior.
Yes.
So, this is natural. Either we accept Lenin or Jinnah, Gandhi or Churchill, this is sentiment. This is sentiment.
But you know, the thing that puzzled me the first time, puzzled me again. The first time when I was in Russia, in 1956, Lenin had died in 1953. He was
all down. Stalin.
Stalin had died in 1953. Khrushchev had exposed him a year or two later. He did this meeting, and later that came out and it was handed to everybody, all over the world. Nevertheless, in spite of the fact that he had been denounced, in 1956 there was a gigantic statue of Stalin in one of the air terminals in Moscow. They have a numerous series of air terminals around Moscow. I think there are 8 or 9 of them. And each one is different. And that thing was there for a long time. When I came back from China into Moscow, I found that in the National Hotel where I stayed.
Yeah, I stayed on there.
You stayed there?
In that corner.
By the
Red Square.
Yes.
And I noticed that there was, when I got into that hotel, that there was a large painting of Stalin downstairs. And then I saw Theodore's granddaughter was there. She had flown in from America, age 19, with the first batch of American people visiting Russia for the first time since the revolution. And I had come from China. And a man stopped me in the lift and said to me, he said, I've come to save these people, man. How are you going to save them? What place? He said, teach them Christianity. I said, you won't, please. He said, well, I'll tell you how I'll do it. And I said, I've just arrived, I'm very tired, I'm going upstairs, I'm going to have a bath if I can manage it. And I couldn't have a bath because I turned the hot tap fell, you know, the thing would turn the tap. And it fell off and cold water came out of it. And I tried the cold tap and hot water came out of it. So I couldn't have a bath. And the next morning, I went to the Kremlin. And the Kremlin was open to the public then for the first time, because John Gordon, who writes in the Sunday Express, when I came back, he asked me for lunch with him. I knew him well. And he said, you didn't see the Kremlin. I said, I did. He said, well, I was there 2 years ago. They wouldn't show the Kremlin to me. I went in there, but they showed me for lunch. Nevertheless, when I was there, in the way to the Kremlin, with a party from the hotel, the National Hotel where he was, he said that it's time to go, especially ours, which are next to the hotel. And I went
big to the hotel. Big hotel.
Another is one that holds 7,000 people, one hotel.
It's a better hotel in Moscow, the less of the bad little people. So I went there with my camera, and there was a girl whom I didn't know, and later learned she was a local daughter, granddaughter. She came up to me and she said, "Sam," and I noticed she had the same camera she had at four times in Japan, and she bought her somewhere else in America. And we took a few pictures together, and then she drifted away, and I drifted away, and then I got to the hotel, there she was, and she came from the inner room, the room where the in-tourist, every hotel has an in-tourist department, as you know. And she came up to me, and she said, "You're living here?" And I said, "Yes." So she said, "May I come and lunch with you?" And I said, "Do please." And I said, "My name is so-and-so." She said, "My name is Kate Roosevelt." She's the granddaughter of Roosevelt. And she was 19, as I say, and she sat with me, and we lunched together, and there, behind my back, the man who was the Canterbury, Dean of Canterbury, a communist, you know who I mean?
Red Dean.
Red Dean, that's right.
What was his name now? I do know his two names in one. And she said to me, she said, "Do you know him?" And I said, "No." She said, "Talk to him." And I said, "Well, we're having lunch now, and I can't get up and tell him why I don't want to know you." But it happened that night that I went to an opera without Hewlett Johnson. And I went to the opera, and I'm not allowed in, and if you haven't reached your seat, well, the curtain went up, you've got to stand at the back, which is what I had to do. And when I finally entered the interval, went forward and sat there. I had my seat, there were five people there. There was the man who was the guy at the corner on the third row. There was Mrs. Hewlett Johnson. Mm-hmm. There were the two daughters, and then the dean, the red dean. And I sat next to him, that was the seat I took. And he turned to me and he said, "You've just arrived from England?" And I said, "No, I've just arrived from China." "Yes, sir." And he said, he said, "It's the greatest country in the world."
And he said,
"Yes, sir." Yeah. And we talked quite a lot, and we went back, and he said, "My two girls like having ice cream. Would you like them to join us for ice cream at the hotel?" So we went back, and I had ice cream at the hotel. And I asked his wife, I said, "You live in Canterbury?" I said, "You're busy." So she said, "Well, I have only one thing to do. She said, I'm a magistrate, and I never know when my husband will be brought up to perform me in the magistrate." Anyhow, he was a man who had a sense of fun.
Yeah.
He believed in the Christian teaching of the appeal to the public, Sermon on the Mount, which to some extent governs the attitude, the religious attitude, I would say the idealistic attitude of the communists. But the communists have enforced the police force and harshness over that so that the thing doesn't operate in the they clash. On the next morning, I went alone to queue up and see the Lenin tomb. And I found that Stalin was in the tomb still. They hadn't moved him up. And Hewlett Johnson came up to me when I came out there, and he said, "He's still there, Stalin, isn't he?" And I said, "Yes, and he's all the stuff." He said, "They're going to put him out, you know." And here's a man who was a communist because he believed in the Christian one. And he allowed for margins which did not operate so far as he should have known, but he didn't know. He was a kindly man who believes in these things. He believes in kindness and gentleness. He believes in God. So that is the position there. When I was there before, they had the two in there. But when we went again, very, very big crowd of people were there for hours, three times a week. And you go in, and the soldiers there, and they will look at you and see where you're holding your hand. You may have a gun in your hand.
No, you must not have your hands in your pocket. You must have your hands at your side, so that they can see. And one person went past, and it was a very cold day, and he had his hands in his pocket, and he took a thing, and he banged his hand, took his hand on him.
It seems that communism and religious feeling doesn't go together.
Yes, it's really
different.
But there was no religious feeling.
No.
What? In seeing the tomb of Lenin, there was no religious
feeling. You didn't go, did you?
No, I wasn't there.
Now, I went to see because my wife had to see it, and they changed it a good deal. You see, the body is not shown as a pool. The body is shown as a vat. And the rest of it doesn't exist. I don't know where the legs are. There's no sign of the legs there at all.
But it's not important.
No, but I'm saying that this is part of a waxwork show.
Yeah.
And the face has to be touched up and painted and everything all the time. It isn't the face that he has. Mm. I think a lot of it is nothing. It's a dummy. Yeah.
It's become a legend, Roland. It's become a legend.
But you know, when one talks about religion, and people say, I am a Catholic, or I am a Jew, or I am a Muslim, or I am something. These are just labels, provided that one really believes and practices that full religion, whether it's Christian, whether it's anything else, they are fully satisfying their God. It is, after all, there is, after all, one creator alone. And no matter what you feel you are, you go to that God. You may think it is one God, somebody may think it's another God, but it is one God, because there can only be one God. So why there are these wars? Over religion is something I can't understand.
The Protestants fighting the Catholics in Ireland now.
Killing. And the most vicious, the most appalling wars are because of religion. Mm-hmm. And if there was one universal religion, there can be no more fighting because this one is something and that one is something.
Mm-hmm.
That's a proven.
That's a proven. Isn't it simple, is it?
There is one God, and we are eternally in service. And the way that you can find out the science of how to satisfy God, that is the perfection of religion.
But how can you satisfy God? Can you satisfy God by shedding all your worldly possessions? By becoming just one member of a community? Is that serving God?
No.
What is serving God?
You can see, stay here for one or two days. You can see how you are serving God. You can learn. You are welcome. We shall give you room and stay. And from morning to night, we say, see how you are serving God.
But there isn't one phrase that tells you what it is.
Hmm?
There isn't one phrase which sums up your...
Yes, there is phrase in Bhagavatam. Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam. Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. Ishara Parama Krishna. Ishara means controller. So controller everyone can become. You are also controller, I am also controller. But Parama Isha, the supreme controller. We are controller, but we are at the same time controlled by somebody else. But Krishna, he is controller, but he is not controlled. Therefore, the Shastra says, Ishara Parama Krishna, Satyananda Vigraha, Anadi, Radhi, Govinda, Sarva Karana, Karana. So here is Krishna. Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharmaan Purittajya Mamitam Sarva. There are so many phrases. Krishna says that real religion is to surrender unto me. Therefore you give up all the pseudo religion. Sarva Dharmaan Purittajya. Give me Mam Ekam Saranam. Just surrender unto me. I shall give you protection from all sinful yes. So here is God. And he is accepted by great acharyas. In India, there are great acharyas, religious leaders, just like Ramanuja Acharya, Madhya Acharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimmartha, later Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when he happens, they accept Krishna, the Supreme Personality. So there is God, His name, His address, His activities, everything is there. If we accept, then it's very good.
Do you think that the poor Indians who are suffering because of this terrible drug in India, is it in India?
Yes.
Yes. Is there relief never going to be in this world? Is it only going to be when they die?
Well, nobody is dying.
Dying is passing, is the spirit passing from the physical body into the
body? Everyone, everywhere is dying. Do you think in your country nobody dies? Is there any guarantee that nobody will die?
No, but everyone dies because this is the pattern and this is the cycle. You are born, you live your life, you die, some people die young.
India, at the present moment, they have lost their culture. In India, 5,000 years ago, when Maharaj Parikshit was there, one black man was trying to kill a cow. He immediately took his sword, the king. He said, "Who are you? You are killing cow in my kingdom." In same India, the government is sanctioning 10,000 cows to be killed daily. So India is not the same India. India has lost its culture. You see. Therefore they are suffering.
But everything is changing. Not only India is changing, every country is changing.
So every country is suffering. Russia is suffering in one way.
California is
suffering in another way. Nobody is free from suffering. I have already explained. There are three kinds of suffering. So who is free from this suffering? You may not be suffering from any bodily disease, but you may be suffering from mental agony. You may not be suffering from mental agony, but you may suffer. Suffering imposed by others. What? There are so many sufferings. This place is suffering. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Dukkhalayam, Asasatam. This place is for suffering. Dukkhala. Dukkha means suffering. Alam means place. Asasatam. And still you cannot make adjustment. If you say all right, let there be little suffering, let me stay here. But that also will not be allowed. You will be kicked out. Get out. Then you have to accept another body. You do not know what kind of body. So these things are there. Don't think the little happy life for 10 years or 20 years is the solution of the problem. There is no solution. Real solution is different. That is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Mam upita kauntiya dukkhalam masasatam napuvanti atma sansiddhim paramanam pranavidam. Mam upita kauntiya dukkhalam masasatam. You are reading Bhagavad Gita, kindly read very carefully, you will get all answers.
I'm going to read it. I have the book.
Yes.
Abrahma Bhuvanaloka, Punaravata Lojana, Mahamute Tukhomte, Pura the Janma Nadijite. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery, wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again.
This is something. Then that people are going to the hard planet system. that is already known. Not this process, but there is another process. How can we do it? Tavama Bhuvanaloka. When you go to the highest planetary system, Brahma Loka, where people live for millions and millions of years. Brahma is one day, 12 hours, we cannot calculate. It's so big number of years. So Krishna says that if you go to the Brahma Loka, still you have to suffer. Simply your suffering will stop. Maho Pesha Krishna is here. Rukhana.
Mamukhe chukunta janma dukkalaya mashashvatam natnubhanti mahatmana samchidhim paramangata.
After
attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection.
This is the highest perfection. You have to go to Krishna.
So when you have had your suffering in various forms and through various lives, you then reach that.
Not that.
No.
You have to prepare yourself to go there. Not that because you have suffered so much, automatically you go there. No, not that. Unless you endeavor for going to Krishna, there is no possibility. That is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tasyaiva hita prajateta kovita nalabhati idad bhamatam uparijata. Human life is meant for trying for that thing which he has not achieved by wandering up and down. So a living entity is wandering up and down, sometimes in the heart planetary system, the lower planetary system, sometimes rich, sometimes poor, sometimes rich, sometimes cat, sometimes dog, sometimes demigod. In this way, he is suffering. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Hey Rupi Brahmanda Bhavite Kono Bhagwan. You understand the man? In this way, in this way, a living entity is wandering. But by fortune, if he gets in touch, Guru Krishna, one of kind, representative of Krishna, Guru, by the mercy of Krishna, because Krishna is everyone's heart, then he gets the seed of devotional service. And if he cultivates the devotional service, then go. This is the point. Not that because one has suffered so much, therefore automatically, not that.
Swamiji, my wife is tired, I think. She's had a long day today. Will I have your permission to take her home?
Oh, yes.
It's been a great joy for me and for my wife to be with you.
Then, please. Come on. Yes. Come on. Yes. Your full name?
Your full name? And if you want, yes,
sir. Thank you. Right. Thank you very much. We will read this with great joy at home. Thank you, Swami.
All right. Thank you for your kindness. Maar dat, dat